Chapter 51. Did she look troubled? Not in the least, bright and fresh as a May morning. S. He has played me many a bitter trick, and poor Nay too, a friend of mine. But I cannot help forgiving her. I saw a carriage at the door, and strolled in. The ceremony was just proceeding, so I sat down here. Well, I have done with Nulcia. The place has no further interest for me now. I may own to you as a friend, that if S.E. had not been living here I should have studied at some other coast. Of course that's in confidence. I understand, quite. I only arrived in the neighborhood 2 days ago, and did not set eyes upon her till this morning, as he has kept so entirely indoors. Then the young men parted, and half an hour later the ingenuous lady well came from the visitors in by the shore, a man walking behind him with a quantity of artists' materials and appliances. He went on board the steamer, which this morning had performed the passage in safety. Ethelberta Single having been the lodestone in the cliffs, that had attracted Lady Well hither, Ethelberta married was the negative pole of the same, sending him away. And thus did a woman put an end to the only opportunity of distinction, on art exhibition walls, that ever offered itself to the tortuous ways, quaint alleys, and marbled bluffs of Nulcia, as accessories in the picture of a winter sea. Christopher's interest in the village was of the same evaporating nature. He looked upon the sea, and the great swell, and the waves sending up a sound like the huzzas of multitudes. But all the wild scene was irksome now. The ocean-bound steamers far away on the horizon inspired him with no curiosity as to their destination. The house Ethelberta had occupied was positively hateful, and he turned away, to wait impatiently for the hour at which he had promised to drive on to meet Sol at Corv's Gate. Sol and Chickerel plodded along the road, in order to skirt Enkworth before the carrier came up. Reaching the top of a hill on their way, they paused to look down on a peaceful scene. It was a park and wood, glowing in all the matchless colors of late autumn, parapets and pediments peering out from a central position afar. At the bottom of the descent before them was a lodge, to which they now descended. The gate stood invitingly open. Exclusiveness was no part of the owner's instincts. One could see that at a glance. No appearance of a well-rolled garden path attached to the park drive, as is the case with many, bedeckoning by the perfection of their surfaces their proprietor's deficiency in hospitality. The approach was like a turnpike road full of great ruts, clumsy mendings, beordered by trampled edges and incursions upon the grass at pleasure. Butchers and bakers drove as freely herein as peers and peeresses. Christening parties, wedding companies, and funeral trains passed along by the doors of the mansion without check or question. A wild untidiness in this particular as its recommendations, for guarded grounds ever convey a suspicion that their owner is young to landed possessions, as religious earnestness implies newness of conversion, and conjugal tenderness recent marriage. Half an hour being wanting as yet to Chickerel's time with the carrier, Sol and himself, like the rest of the world when at leisure, walked into the extensive stretch of grass and grove. It formed a park so large, that not one of its owners had ever wished it larger, not one of its owner's rivals had ever failed to wish it smaller, and not one of its owner's satellites had ever seen it without praise. They somewhat avoided the roadway passing under the huge, misshapen, ragged trees, and through fern brakes, ruddy and crisp in their decay. On reaching a suitable eminence, the father and son stood still, to look upon the many-chimneyed building, or rather conglomeration of buildings, to which these groves and glades formed a setting. "We will just give a glance," said Chickerel, "and then go away. It don't seem well to me that Ethelberta should have this. It is too much. The sudden change will do her no good. I never believe in anything that comes in the shape of wonderful luck. As it comes, so it goes. Had she been brought home today to one of those tenant farms instead of these woods and walls, I could have called it good fortune. What she should have done was glorify herself by glorifying her own line of life, not by forsaking that line for another. Better have been admired as a governess than shunned as a peeress, which is what she will be. But it is just the same everywhere in these days. Young men will rather wear a black coat and starve than wear fustian and do well. One man to want such a monstrous house as that. Well, 'tis a fine place. See, there's the carpenter's shops, the timber yard, and everything, as if it were a little town. Perhaps Berta may hire me for a job now and then. I always knew she would cut herself off from us. She marked for it from childhood, and she has finished the business thoroughly. Well, it is no matter, father, for why should we want to trouble her? She may write, and I shall answer, but if she calls to see me, I shall not return the visit, and if she meets me with her husband, or any of her new society about her, I shall behave as a stranger. It will be best, said Chickerel. Well, now I must move. However, by the sorcery of accident, before they had very far retraced their steps, an open carriage became visible round a bend in the drive. Chickerel, with a servant's instinct, was for beating a retreat. No, said Sol. Let us stand our ground. We have already been seen, and we do no harm. So they stood still on the edge of the drive, and the carriage drew near. It was a landau, and the sun shone in upon Lord Mountclere, with Lady Mountclere sitting beside him, like Abishag beside King David. Very blithe looked the Viscount, for he rode upon a cherub today. She appeared fresh, rosy, and strong, but dubious. Though if mean was anything, she was a Viscountess twice over. Her dress was of a dove-colored material, with a bonnet to match, a little tufted white feather resting on the top, like a truce flag between the blood of noble and vassal. Upon the cool gray of her shoulders hung a few locks of hair, toned warm as fire by the sunshiny addition to its natural hue. Chickerel instinctively took off his hat. Sol did the same. For only a moment did Ethelberta seem uncertain how to act. But a solution to her difficulty was given by the face of her brother. There she saw plainly at one glance more than a dozen speeches would have told, for Sol's features thoroughly expressed his intention, that to him, she was to be a stranger. Her eyes flew to Chickerel, and he slightly shook his head. She understood them now. With a tear in her eye for her father, and a sigh in her bosom for Sol, she bowed in answer to their salute. Her husband moved his hat and nodded, and the carriage rolled on. Lord Mountclere might possibly be making use of the fine morning in showing her the park and premises. Chickerel, with a moist eye, now went on with his son towards the high road. When they reached the lodge keeper was walking in the sun, smoking his pipe. Good morning, he said to Chickerel. Any rejoicings at the court today? The butler inquired. Quite the reverse. Not a soul there. Tisn't known anywhere at all. I had no idea of such a thing till he brought my lady here. Not going off, neither. They've come home like the commonest couple in the land, and not even the bells allowed to ring. They walked along the public road, and the carrier came in view. Father, said Sol, I don't think I'll go further with you. She's gone into the house, and suppose she should run back without him to try to find us? It would be cruel to disappoint her. I'll bide about here for a quarter of an hour, in case she should. Mr. Julian won't have passed Corv's gate till I get there. Well, one or two of her old ways may be left in her still, and it is not a bad thought. Then you will walk the rest of the distance, if you don't meet Mr. Julian. I must be in London by the evening. Any time tonight will do for me. I shall not begin work until tomorrow, so that the 4 o'clock train will answer my purpose. Thus they parted, and Sol strolled leisurely back. The road was quite deserted, and he lingered by the park fence. Sol. Said a bird-like voice. How did you come here? He looked up, and saw a figure peering down upon him from the top of the park wall, the ground on the inside, being higher than the road. The speaker was to the expected Ethelberta, what the moon is to the sun, a star to the moon. It was Piketty. Hello, Piketty. Said Sol. There's a little gate a quarter of a mile further on, said Piketty. We can meet there without your passing through the big lodge. I'll be there, as soon as you. Sol ascended the hill, passed through the second gate, and turned back again, when he met Piketty coming forward under the trees. They walked together in this secluded spot. Berta says she wants to see you and father, said Piketty breathlessly. You must come in, and make yourselves comfortable. She had no idea you were here so secretly, and she didn't know what to do. Father's gone, said Sol. How vexed she will be. She thinks there is something the matter, that you are angry with her for not telling you earlier. But you will come in, Sol? No, I can't come in, said her brother. Why not? It is such a big house, you can't think. You need not come near the front apartments, if you think we shall be ashamed of you in your working clothes. How came you not to dress up a bit, Sol? Still, Berta won't mind it much. She says Lord Mountclair must take her as she is, or he is kindly welcome to leave her. I might have had a word or two to say about that, but the time has gone by for it, worse luck. Perhaps it is best that I have said nothing, and as he has had her way. No, I shan't come in, Piketty. Father is gone, and I am going to. Sol. We are rather put out at her acting like this, father, and I and all of us. She might have let us know about it beforehand, even if she is a lady and we what we always was. It wouldn't have let her down so terrible much to write a line. She might have learned something that would have led her to take a different step. But you will see poor Berta? He has done no harm. She was going to write long letters to all of you today, explaining her wedding, and how she is going to help us all on in the world. Sol paused irresolutely. No, I won't come in, he said. It would disgrace her, for one thing, dressed as I be. More than that, I don't want to come in. But I should like to see her, if she would like to see me, and I'll go up there to that little fir plantation, and walk up and down behind it for exactly half an hour. She can come out to me there. Sol had pointed as he spoke to a knot of young trees that hooded a knoll a little way off. I'll go and tell her, said Piketty. I suppose they will be off somewhere, and she is busy getting ready? No. They are not going to travel till next year. Ethelberta does not want to go anywhere, and Lord Mountclair cannot endure this changeable weather in any place but his own house. Poor fellow. Then you will wait for her by the furs? I'll tell her at once. Piketty left him, and Sol went across the glade. 46. Engworth continued the Angleberry Highway. He had not paced behind the furs more than 10 minutes, when Ethelberta appeared from the opposite side. At great inconvenience to herself, as he had complied with his request. Ethelberta was trembling. She took her brother's hand, and said, Is father, then, gone? Yes, said Sol. I should have been gone likewise, but I thought you wanted to see me. Of course I did, and him too. Why did you come so mysteriously, and, I must say, unbecomingly? I am afraid I did wrong in not informing you of my intention. To yourself you may have. Father would have liked a word with you before you did it. You both looked so forbidding that I did not like to stop the carriage when we passed you. I want to see him on an important matter. Is leaving Mrs. Doncastle's service at once. I am going to write and beg her to dispense with a notice, which I have no doubt she will do. He's very much upset about you. My secrecy was perhaps an error of judgment. She said sadly. But I had reasons. Why did you and my father come here at all, if you did not want to see me? We did want to see you up to a certain time. You did not come to prevent my marriage? We wished to see you before the marriage. I can't say more. I thought you might not approve of what I had done. Said Ethelberta mournfully. But a time may come when you will approve. Never. Don't be harsh, soul. A coronet covers a multitude of sins. A coronet. Good Lord and you, my sister. Look at my hand. Soul extended his hand. Look how my thumb stands out at the root, as if it were out of joint, and that hard place inside there. Did you ever see anything so ugly as that hand? A misshaped monster, isn't he? That comes from the jack plane, and my pushing against it day after day and year after year. If I were found drowned or buried, dressed or undressed, in fustian or in broadcloth, folk would look at my hand and say, that man's a carpenter. Well now, how can a man, branded with work as I be brother to a viscountess without something being wrong? Of course there's something wrong in it, or he wouldn't have married you, something which won't be righted without terrible suffering. No, said she. You are mistaken. There is no such wonderful Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.